And the next guest is Dr. Dorothy Neddermeyer, another wonderful lady discussing the emotion-disease connection. You may have heard that our thoughts manifest reality. Well, what about our thoughts manifesting disease? Dr. Dorothy has documented this for decades. Let's hear from Dr. Dorothy Neddermeyer on the emotion-disease connection.
And so in the Western world, that's why we rank the worst in the world as far as healthcare is concerned. We rank 37th. That's astonishing that we as the World Health Organization ranks the United States as 37th in healthcare efficiency and effectiveness.
Why do you think that is?
Well, because we look to have someone fix it for us. We look to have pills, potions, body parts cut out. And if those three things don't work, then we use radiation and chemotherapy.
You know, I always say that technology is becoming more and more affordable. However, The more we connect technologically, I think the more we disconnect from life. Is this a true statement?
Absolutely. Without question. If you connect with the universe, the universal energy, you are reconnecting to who you truly are as spiritual beings. And energy is all there is. Energy and matter is all there is, and all energy and all matter is interconnected. And it's on the understanding that everything in the universe is in sync with each other at the microscopic level. We are just a whirling mass of electrons and energy atoms spinning around. And so when we become disconnected from our source, which is the universal energy, the earth, the wind, the fire, and the water, the elements, we're disconnected from that energy that we need to be using to propel ourselves.
So you take the quote-unquote history of you take the history of a symptom, and through hypnosis, you find the core emotional issue, and you see that the symptom is a message that body parts need help. You know, an example, better nutrition, emotional healing, and or spiritual transformation. Please explain more.
Correct. Well, you look at the symptom. And you could even start with just a simple abdominal pain if you want, if that's, you know, do we have abdominal pain? Yes, we call them abdominal cramps. And surprisingly enough, abdominal cramps are fear that's stopping the process of food digestion, for example, or the poor, and in addition to could be poor nutrition. Now, when I say poor nutrition, I'm not talking about Bangladesh, and I'm not talking about the ghettos. I'm talking about the average American person walking around has poor nutrition. We eat fast food. We eat processed food. We eat junk food. We eat a lot of sweets, and that's poor nutrition. So even though you may be spending a lot of money on food, you're spending money on poor nutrition in the meantime. So abdominal cramps has two levels, and that would be, of course, the emotional piece as well as the nutritional piece. So when I talk to that person who has the abdominal cramps, I would be evaluating what's your nutrition and what's your fear level and what's the fear about. And sometimes they don't even know. They don't know they have fear, and that's where hypnosis comes in, and I can just simply ask the subconscious mind, what's the fear about? And the answer pops out.
I'm so glad we're talking about the subconscious mind, because many people don't know how to tap into that, and I want to discuss this. But I'm glad you mentioned how we in the Western world, when we think of starvation, we think of these horrendous pictures from, you know, Southeast Asia, Africa, and we think that those are the only ones who are starving. But you can see an obese person who's literally starving, because I think since the 1930s, at least in the United States, our soil has been losing nutrients. Can we say that many diseases are due to lack of nutrients?
Oh, absolutely. And not only that, we use pesticides and we use artificial fertilizer and we use all kinds of bug sprays. And so we're eating a lot of toxic stuff along with our food that is ravishing our bodies, even though we don't know it, because it's being ravished inch by inch rather than just in one fell swoop. And no, people don't do detoxes. You ask the average person, they don't do a detox, detoxing metals, for example, and detoxing from pesticides and that sort of thing. And eating organic, of course, is the answer to that issue. But people think that it's too expensive.
Well, one 11-year-old child said this best in a TED Talk, I believe it was last year. He was discussing organic and saying, I understand it's more expensive, but would you rather pay a little bit more now rather than paying a lot more later in life?
Exactly. Yeah, I heard that. I saw that.
Then, similar to Gwen Olson, the next guest is someone who worked deep inside Big Pharma. He actually was in charge of Eli Lilly in Sweden and had a career of 35 years in the pharmaceutical industry. Let me read an excerpt from Dr. John Virapen's book titled Side Effects, Death. Quote, I bribed a Swedish professor to enhance the registration of Prozac in Sweden. Pharmaceutical companies want to keep people sick. They want to make others think that they are sick. And they do this for one reason, money. Did you know pharmaceutical companies invest more than 35,000 euros, over $50,000 per physician each year to get them to prescribe their products? More than 75% of leading scientists in the field of medicine are, quote-unquote, paid for by the pharmaceutical industry. Corruption prevailed in the approval and marketing of drugs in some cases. Illnesses are made up by the pharmaceutical industry and specifically marketed to enhance sales and market shares for the companies in question. Dr. John Virapen is coming clean and telling all of the little secrets you were never intended to know. Here's a preview. And we'll definitely discuss some of the ins and outs and some of the parallels I found, John, between our elected officials and the pharmaceutical industry. But let me just read this from your book. Quote, you say that night after night, shadowy figures gather at your bedside. They usually appear during the early hours of the morning. They bank their heads against the walls and cut their arms and throats with razor blades. You wake up drenched in sweat. You say you indirectly contributed to the death of the people whose shadows now haunt you. You didn't personally kill anyone, but you feel indirectly responsible for their deaths. You were a willing tool of the pharmaceutical industry. Can you reflect on this?
Yes. After the product was later registered and it went all over the world, it was a live wire in the industry. And I was directly responsible in a way, because even though it never got registered in Sweden, I had negotiated a price with the government. And pricing is a key element for the pharma companies, especially Lilly. They took this price, which became international, even though you don't have an approval, the price was approved. And they took that, which was a very high price, by the way. It was $1.20 per 20 milligram tablet. Do the math. Prozac went on to be the first ever blockbuster drug.
I don't mean to interrupt you, John, but please define what blockbuster means in the pharmaceutical industry so people understand.
Yeah. Blockbuster comes from Hollywood, as you know. And blockbuster in those days meant going past the barrier. They are not satisfied with 100 and 200 million and 500 million. They wanted $1 billion in sales. And that's what they got with Prozac. Nowadays, at this moment, they're speaking about $5-6 billion. Products. And I'll get back to you on some of those in a little later. But the blockbuster was like blockbuster movies, you know, when the movies come out and they make millions and millions of dollars.
Right.
They got the name Blockbuster. And that's how Prozac became the first one. And then the side effects started turning up, which they turned a nonchalant type attitude towards this. And the big one was akathisia. Akathisia is the suicide side effect, where people go and they do strange things and they kill themselves. They found in the side effects of many people, there was a woman that went and started eating her grandmother, literally biting her, chewing her flesh. There's a very famous singer, guy called Del Shannon. He took the drug and he apparently got a razor blade and started cutting himself to pieces. And many, many, many others. The FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, who rules over drugs in general in the United States and perhaps even in the world, didn't turn an eye or say, hey, let's take a closer look at this. Then I heard that there was a committee set up with the politicians. At that time, you had a vice president, the one that couldn't spell potato. What's his name?
Dan Quayle.
Yeah. He was heading the committee. This is all what I've heard. And it is alleged that that committee, they said, no, there isn't enough there to do anything about this product. But maybe people don't know that Dan Quayle's wife was the head lawyer of Eli Lilly and Company.
Is that right?
Ah, yeah. And he himself was an Indianapolis boy. And in cases like that, when you become a vice president or anything else, the big corporations, they funnel the money.
Which Indianapolis happens to be the headquarters for
exactly.
Eli
exactly.
Lilly.
Yeah. So there are a lot of political mishaps and, you know, increment, if you want to call it, that is around playing. And I was reading your website before we got on air, and you said something interesting there, that above all, like the media is owned and run by very few corporations who are above the level of human consciousness, the dark side or the unknown, like with everything else, not only pharmaceuticals, but I mean the world order, new world order, they call them, or whoever, Rockefeller and all of these people, they are the people that have started this whole thing, and they have the world. The whole world is in a grip, and I don't know how to shake loose. Personally, I'm loose. But people have been mind manipulated for the last 100 years.
Well, it seems, John, that that health has become a commodity, and they want to own that commodity. But you were mentioning how the lady who unfortunately was biting her mother off and the person who was cutting himself, you know, obviously there are defects with these prescription drugs. And let me ask you, if your car and my car, the brakes don't work every time, or if their windshield falls out when the car is driven at over 40 miles an hour, for example, or if its exhaust fumes are channeled into the inside of the car, it wouldn't make it onto the market. Medicines with equally dangerous side effects do. Why are consumers better protected against defective cars than against what happens to their bodies, to their health, and to their lives?
That's the billion-dollar question. That's because we are dealing with people with greed. Not only that, I must say that United States of America, are the best marketeers in the world. And funny enough, they're now spreading that into other countries and putting their finger in the jar all over the place. And you have to take your hats off to them, their strategy and the way they do marketing, because that's all it is with the pharma industry and the consumer. But people do not realize that they are consumers, not patients. They are consumers. Because every time they get a pain somewhere, they run to the doctor. The doctors are trained to be perceived by everybody as demigods. You go to Germany, for example, where I've seen it's very, very prevalent. You don't look at the doctor over there in his eyes. He looks down on you. And nowadays, even more so, you can question these people. I don't want to say the word aloud. But you will always be the underdog to these people. They rule now. And I am not going to stand for it. And I hope the world is going to get out of this also.
Let me be clear. Sanitas not only means health, but sanity of mind, body, and spirit. The next guest is an example of this. Dr. Jacob Lieberman has written many books, including Light, Medicine of the Future, How We Can Use It to Heal Ourselves Now, and another, which is the title of our interview, Take Off Your Glasses and See, A Mind-Body Approach to Expanding Your Eyesight and Insight. Dr. Lieberman has an interesting story. Let's hear some of it.
It's interesting that two-thirds of the U.S. and world's population wear eyeglasses. Hardly anyone is born needing them. It's the biggest health epidemic in the world. And yet, the unfortunate thing is most eye doctors continue to do the same thing over and over again, even though they're getting the same response. People's eyes continually get worse. They come back in each year with the same complaint, I can't see, and they're given a bigger dosage of the same thing that didn't work the year before. I always say, what's wrong with this picture? I'm surprised that no one else is questioning that. Well, basically, between the vision training that I did in late 1975, early 1976, gradually reducing the time that I was using glasses, it improved my eyesight, but then something happened that was very, very profound that really made the quantum leap. At the time, I was meditating on a daily basis. And one day during the weekend, I was sitting and doing my normal meditation. My eyeglasses were off. And I had a very unusual experience I had never had before. Even though my eyes were closed, I found that I felt as though I was seeing the room that I was sitting in, including seeing myself within that room. I had never had an experience like that before. Today, people call that an out-of-body experience, but I had never had anything like that happen. What was interesting was that everything that I was observing from what I thought at the time was the mind's eye was crystal clear. It wasn't just optically clear. Everything was clear. There were no questions. There were no concerns. Everything was very still, very peaceful, and totally clear. And when I opened my eyes and came out of that experience, I looked around the room and I noticed that everything was much clearer than I remembered it. I got in my car. My glasses were on the seat next to me. I started driving to my office. It was unusual. I could read all the stop signs. I could read all the billboards. Everything was clear. The license plates, everything was clear. And then I realized, as I was driving, that during that experience, I couldn't tell from where I was seeing. It was almost as though what was observing that experience was seeing from everywhere in the room simultaneously. at the time, I didn't know what to make of that, but I went to my office because I was interested in seeing what had happened. Because I was a researcher at the time, I had a new electronic eye chart projector with hundreds of different eye charts that I had never seen. So I sat 20 feet away without any glasses on, and I started to project different eye charts and then check to see the accuracy of what I was reading. Well, I was consistently seeing one line better than 20/20 without any squinting, without any straining. And I said, my God, what's happened here? I mean, everything that I was trained led me to believe that this was not possible. So I decided to actually examine myself. I put myself behind the instrument that eye doctors use. It's called a phoropter. And I put some lenses in it that would make everything very blurry at first, and then gradually began to examine myself, asking myself which is better, number one or number two, just like I did with my patients. But I wasn't able to see what the prescription was that I was changing because I was behind the instrument as I was doing this. Well, when I finished and came out from behind the device, I figured since I was seeing 300% better without squinting or straining, the instrument was going to say that I didn't have any prescription at all. But what amazed me was that when I came out from behind the device and looked at the instrument, the prescription that it found was almost identical to what I was wearing in my glasses. And then I was totally stumped. How is it possible that without straining or squinting, without any glasses on, I'm seeing 300% better, and yet the optical measurements of my eyes have not changed at all? And then I realized that the only way that can occur is if the source of our seeing is not the eye. And so what's interesting, to make a long story short, is that was in the beginning of 1976. It's now 38 years later. I'm going to be 66 years old this November, and I have never had a pair of glasses of any type on my face since that day.
And now we go to Dr. Brent Dean Robbins, co-editor of the book titled Drugging Our Children, How Profiteers Are Pushing Antipsychotics on Our Youngest, and What We Can Do to Stop It. When we look at the 1990s, before that, it was really uncommon to see any child with antipsychotics. And in 1987, there were fewer than 50,000 U.S. youth under 18 years old who were prescribed an antipsychotic. What changed?
Yeah, we started to see a steep increase in the use of antipsychotics after the introduction of the newly patented atypical antipsychotic drugs. So there was a point in time, this is alluding to a point I made earlier in our conversation, when a drug is, where the drug companies make most of their money is from a drug that's just been recently patented. Because once the drug goes off patent, then generic drugs can compete with that drug. So they try to make most of their money, they have to make most of their money while the drugs are in the first, you know, in the first years of the drugs being on the market. So when these newly patented atypical antipsychotic drugs entered the scene, that was first in 1990. It was Clozaril was the first atypical antipsychotic drug, and the claim was that, you know, this new atypical antipsychotic and the other atypical antipsychotics would have fewer side effects. Referring specifically to those extrapyramidal symptoms we discussed earlier, like the motor deficits that are Parkinsonian, similar to Parkinson's disease, like tardive dyskinesia and akathisia. However, Clozaril had a real major problem because it could lead to white blood cell depletion, which could be a very serious side effect that could lead to death in certain people. So obviously,
so it lowers your immune system.
Yes, that's right. So it was not used very much for that reason, obviously. But in 1993, Risperdal came along, and that was introduced to the market. And then soon after that came Zyprexa and Seroquel, which are still the three, you know, leading forms of atypical antipsychotics. And these newly patented drugs were heavily marketed as a replacement for the old version of antipsychotics, which were already off patent and were claimed as I said, were claimed to have fewer side effects. But after a while, it became clear that they still had extrapyramidal symptom side effects. And then they had a whole new bunch of side effects having to do with mainly metabolic side effects, increase in weight gain. We saw a lot of weight gain and increase in the risk of type 2 diabetes and endocrine problems that were emerging from these drugs. But this was when these new drugs came on the market, that's when we started seeing a lot of off-label marketing to children and the elderly, which, as we talked about earlier, led to major lawsuits against the drug company who manufactured those drugs. And this incredible increase in the use of atypical antipsychotics with children was greatly influenced by Joseph Biederman, who we also discussed earlier, who was that Harvard pediatrician. You know, he pushed the idea that children could be diagnosed with pediatric bipolar disorder. And with funding from Johnson & Johnson, the makers of Risperdal, he began to research and promote the idea that atypical antipsychotics were the drug of choice for this disorder. And once Biederman began to promote these ideas, they began to have an influence on practice all over the place. And the number of children under age 20 diagnosed with bipolar disorder went from 20,000 in 1994 to 800,000 in 2003. That is, you know, in less than 10 years, a 40-fold increase. At the same time, the number of atypical antipsychotic prescriptions to children under age 18 in the United States doubled from about 2.2 million in 2002 to 4.4 million in 2006. You know, so we see this expanded use of bipolar disorder as a pediatric diagnosis made children the fastest growing part of $11.5 million U.S. market for antipsychotic drugs, and the fastest growing piece of that were children. And as I later discovered and mentioned earlier, you know, Biederman had taken money under the table from Johnson & Johnson. So this wasn't – it wasn't just, you know, a fortuitous thing that Biederman had just happened to discover this new disorder that would be treated by these drugs. It seemed to be orchestrated really right from the beginning. It was all planned out this way. And once you started seeing children being prescribed these drugs for – pediatric bipolar disorder, then it began to be used for all kinds of things. You started seeing it being given to children for, you know, just having behavior problems and having attention problems and oppositional behaviors and so on. Things that normally you never would have seen children prescribe antipsychotics for, you started to see them really routinely being given to children. And even in some cases being used as a sleep aid, which is sort of alluded to in the title of my chapter, From Ice Pick Lobotomies to Antipsychotics as Sleep Aids for Children. You know, there were psychiatrists who were giving these drugs to children as a sleep aid, which is incredible.
And now we go to Patricia Bish. Do you ever wonder why so many people diet? Also, do you ever wonder why, instead of rewarding our bodies with endorphins and strength, we punish it for what we have eaten? What if I told you that you could eat anything you want without gaining weight? According to Patricia Bish, she has been doing just that for decades, and she has plenty of client testimonials to prove it. Let's hear from Patricia Bish and Freedom from Food, a quantum weight loss approach. Tonight, we will ask the listeners to open up and expand into some new concepts that sometimes go beyond the confines of conventional thought. When people hear that food does not make you gain weight and that you can eat chocolate, bread, and butter, or anything else, and it will not affect your weight, they will be wondering if this is possible. Is this really possible? And what is freedom from food?
Well, it is possible with practice and with a training. When you really look at food as energy and a whole different way, more from a scientific view, where you're looking at food as fluctuating, moving energy that's intelligent, and that the mind is determining the flow of that energy. That's what there has been abundant scientific evidence showing now, that we have the power, actually, to change the cells of our body with our thoughts and our thinking.
As a matter of fact, we have the power to change our DNA, the scientists are telling us. It started like it starts for many people when I was a young girl. And I was the apple of my father's eye. And then my sister was born. And there she kind of stepped into my light. And I didn't realize I was so dependent on my father's love. But when it was taken away, it was very sad for me. And at that point, it was kind of a heartbreak, even though people can have heartbreaks all along their life with love relationships, or sometimes people have abuse and it gets broken. But the theme of love going away and feeling not good enough and trying to figure out why love was taken away from you usually is what causes people to feel very anxious inside. And that's how I was. And I needed something to calm me down. And that's where food came in. Food was my protector in a sense. It was the parent that was giving me love that I wasn't getting. And it was the way I calmed myself.
Now, at that time, as a teenager, you suffer with food. As you say, it was your comfort. What made you change? What was that moment that you decided, I need to take charge of my life?
Well, first I tried everything. I was in diets, and I'd like to ask people who are dieting, how's it going for you? Because for me, after so many years, I was still dieting, and it wasn't working for me. I would gain weight and lose weight. I would binge. Then I would try and use my willpower and diet. I took diet pills. I went on every kind of diet there was. And I soon just got to a point in my 20s where I couldn't diet anymore. It just wasn't working. And I needed to reach for something else. And at the same time, in my 20s, I was studying the mind-body approach to life and to disease. And I was learning intellectually how to heal all kinds of diseases, and was being taught that my mind affected that. And that's how it all began for me to begin to shift.
I remember since the 1980s, you turn on the TV late at night and all you saw and you still see are infomercials, mostly to get in shape or lose weight the fastest. We've gotten accustomed to receiving instant gratification. We want a fast car, fast internet connection, fast mail delivery, fast service, and fast food. How do we turn the tide?
Well, I think that's a really good point. You know, people are wanting a fast fix, and they're looking on the outside for a pill, for a diet, for someone to tell them how to exercise. You know, and I'm not saying that all of those things aren't good, but they're all on the outside. And what I've discovered is that where it really counts, what the greatest tool of all people have is right inside themselves, that their mind is more powerful than any of these things. And what I've seen is that, and what happened to me, is that when I learned to focus my mind and beliefs and began trusting the intelligence of my body to heal itself, I began to lose weight and healed my problem. And that empowerment, that understanding. We have a choice what we think. And people don't realize how strong and empowered that tool is.
We're so outward directed, so important. We're looking for the fix, the next diet, the next cleanse, the next things we should eat and shouldn't eat. It's so confusing. People don't know what to do about food anymore. Patricia?
It's true. You know, everything, even what's healthy and what's not, we're very confused. You know, you start eating what they tell you to eat, and then the next week they come out and tell you, you better not have eaten that. You know, like margarine. We were all supposed
exactly.
to eat margarine. And then it came out, oh, you better not eat margarine anymore, trans fats or whatever it was. And it seems down the line, this is happening so much. So we're all confused. But what we do have from the very beginning is we have a blueprint right inside of us of a perfect body that we were born into. And that body was set up in the very beginning to eliminate anything that was toxic, to heal. We have our skin, our kidneys, our liver, everything in us was set in a way to heal. So if we get a cut, it forms a scab, then the scab falls off, and we don't have to make that happen. There is an automatic part of us that if we begin to trust that our body is there for us to eliminate what isn't good, to take away what is toxic, then we begin to have a friend with our body instead of an enemy.
The next guest caught my attention because my story was a bit similar to hers. I was lucky that I didn't develop multiple sclerosis, as she did. Like her, I was also a type A individual who was always busy and stressed. The story is even more powerful. In her 20s, she was fully diagnosed with MS. And instead of accepting life that way without being able to get out of bed for days, at one point, her pain and suffering were so unbearable that she could not take it anymore. She almost took her life and had a near-death experience. And says she was asked, "Do you want to stay or do you want to go? You have so much to share." So she decided to stay and found alternative ways to heal herself. And now her mission is to educate, elevate, and inspire people on how they too can get well. And now she tells her story. She's still young and vibrant and is a crusader who helps people. Her name is Anne Baroque, and she has written two books, Healing Multiple Sclerosis, Diet, Detox, and Nutritional Makeover for Total Recovery, and The Candida Cure, Yeast, Fungus, and Your Health, the 90-day program to beat Candida and restore vibrant health. Let's hear from Anne Baroque. And I have to say, first of all, that anyone reading this book could actually remove the words multiple sclerosis and add anything they want, because pretty much you cover everything.
Well, and that's, you know, look at when we're looking at more chronic conditions and even stuff that's more moderate, you have to look at the person as a whole. It's never going to come down to just one thing. It's looking at combinations of how you're managing stress, to what your diet is like, to whether you're taking supplementation, are you sleeping well, exercising. So, you know, and I found in my own personal journey that if you don't deal with all those components, particularly in my situation, you're not going to turn around an autoimmune condition. So it took me bumping many walls and having a lot of resistance and figuring out what is the whole package to help the body heal.
And I'm not going to issue a blanket statement to say that all doctors are bad, because this doctor that I saw was open-minded enough to tell me about what was going on. But I see that there's a preponderance, there's a convergence right now, Anne, of lack of nutrients in our soil. Since the 1930s, we've been losing nutrients in our soil. Environmental toxicity everywhere, preponderance of stress, and now even EMF. How can we circumvent all these things that are hitting us at once?
Right. And I just want to follow up on that point. It's, you know, I tell people, I'm not anti-Western. We need drug surgery, and there are some great MDs, and some of them are my colleagues. But what I'm saying as a whole, we do crisis management in this country. We don't do enough prevention and education. So my thing is I'm more annoyed because we're not working together, and we need that cohesiveness now, not tomorrow. 10 years from now, we need it now, and that's really the point I want to say about that. And you're right. We are getting bombarded from every angle, and you can feel quite overwhelmed, and I just say start simply. The very best thing you can do is to clean up your environment, which means start to change your diet. The four biggest things that inflame us are alcohol, sugars, dairy, and gluten. When it comes to EMFs, the best thing to do to offset that is have your head facing magnetic north and make sure that you don't have all these gadgets and things in your bedroom if you do power them all the way down. Because we just tend to have them all around us, and they're shooting off these EMFs, and that's just creating more inflammation in the body. Environmental toxins, look at, you know, you can kind of move to a different location, but most of us don't want to do that. And the main thing is make sure you have clean water. So don't drink tap water. Get yourself a purification system. and, you know, use non-toxic cleaning products and no pesticides in the yards and garden. And, you know, the other thing is to manage your stress and to sleep well. Quality sleep is the number one body breaker, that and stress. So if you can get quality sleep, that's going to hugely intensify the boosting your immune system. And the other thing is to manage stress. We all have stress. It's just some of us are better at neutralizing it. And so it's everything from exercise to meditation, you know, even being in nature because it's so grounding, and, you know, hug a tree because there's negative ions, and put your feet on the grass. People call it grounding. They now have these units you can put when you're at work under your feet. And the main thing is enjoy life. You know, we're working so hard. The world's in the chaos right now, so we're all a bit overwhelmed. But, you know, find the joy in the now moment. Hug your dogs when you can, hug your kids and your family, and have a hobby that you enjoy. And it's really coming down to balance. You can't control everything, but you take baby steps and looking at what is going on in my life and what can I integrate and make small steps so that you feel that you're succeeding. Because I find when you throw all this information out, people get overwhelmed and they do nothing. So, for instance, if it's going to be diet, well, maybe not give up all those four things. Maybe you start on titrating down your alcohol. Instead of doing 5 drinks a week, you go down to 3 and then eventually do none. Because, you know, it is a neurotoxin. You know, and then you go to sugar. You know, you start to reduce and then find better forms, whether it be stevia or Lohan or other extracts that, you know, I mentioned in my books. So that's really the thing, is that you do have to become aware. I think to think that you're not going to be affected and not make some lifestyle changes today, I think that's not what you want to do. You need to just know that we're living in a time that's very taxing on all of our systems. And, you know, we just need to have a little bit more awareness and take some small steps. And before you know it, you're changing your lifestyle habits and living in a more balanced way.
You know, the more I interview people, I'm coming to the conclusion, Anne, that there's an emotional or emotion disease connection. Do you think that every disease has an emotional core?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that when you're talking in chronic, autoimmune, cancer, you know, absolutely. I think that, you know, I can align it that, you know, I specialize in autoimmune, so I think the core thread there is low self-esteem and suppressed anger and perfectionism. I think cancer has a theme of guilt. I definitely think people are in such toxic relationships, whether it's work environment or personal, and if you don't work through these factors, that stores in your cell memory. And, you know, when people get angry at their bodies, I'm like, look, it's a gift. It's a language that's trying to get your attention to say, please take care of me. You're not honoring me enough. You're not taking action when you need to take action. I mean, these are signaling to letting you know that things aren't happening. So, you know, you want to use it as a positive to tune in so that you can make the changes necessary. So I think if you ask me, you can't have a chronic condition without having mental, emotional, and spiritual factors off.
Do you think your condition was also derived from emotional issues?
Absolutely. You know, I grew up, you know, my parents split at 3, and, you know, they were very much, it was heated, so there wasn't, you know, I was very much put in the middle because I was an only child. And, you know, I had, you know, very intense critical parents, and so there was a lot of self-esteem. And I'm, you know, this happy-go-lucky Libra that wants everybody balanced and happy and having a good time. And it wasn't that way. And so I suppressed a lot of my intuition. I suppressed a lot of my feelings and my thoughts. I didn't feel like I had a voice. And so I feel a lot of that destroyed my immune system. Absolutely.
By the way, I'm also a Libra. And the last guest I will feature tonight should give you a good idea of where Sanitas is going. Although this is a tip of the iceberg. But the last guest I will preview tonight is Greg Caton. I've never heard of Greg Caton before. It was someone close to me who referred me to him. The person who referred me to him was diagnosed with skin cancer. He was told they needed to remove parts of his nose, go through chemo, radiation, etc., etc. Well, he stepped outside the box and found alternative cures. That's how he found Greg Caton. He used Greg's herbal products, and his cancer is gone, at least for now. His doctor cannot even believe it. Greg has a very interesting story. The FDA Federal Drug Administration made it their goal to get rid of them. Greg has a very interesting story, worthy of a Hollywood movie. The FDA, the Federal Drug Administration, made it their goal to get rid of him because evidently he was a threat to the pharmaceutical industry. Greg was not only in prison once, but twice. He served a total of 5 years in federal prison, 3 years the first time, and 2 years after his extraordinary rendition, an illegal kidnapping and extradition from Ecuador. First, the FDA with guns drawn raided his business, his health lab, which until then had passed FDA inspections every year in Louisiana. After serving 3 years, he and his family left for Ecuador, where he restarted his herbal product business, which was perfectly legal in Ecuador. Then, as if things couldn't get any worse, he was kidnapped, and the unholy alliance of the FDA, the U.S. Department of State, illegally extradited Greg from Ecuador in what is known today, when I thought it was reserved only for terrorists, as extraordinary rendition. This is a story of suppression and persecution of a man, of the cure for cancer, of the truth. Let's hear a preview from Greg Caton. What did you think when you saw your face right there next to Osama bin Laden and other FBI's most wanted?
You know, then and now, I can't even begin to, you know, I thought, as I have frequently thought since, I live in a world I no longer recognize. I truly live in a world I do not recognize. It was, this is beyond, you know, this is beyond the pale. This is way over the top. And the proof, as I've said repeatedly, the proof that everything that the U.S., everything the United States government was saying, everything the State Department was saying, the FDA, Interpol, all of these interconnected agencies that are in this busy in this grand global circle of licking each other's boots, were all lying. The proof of it is of what happened to me subsequent to that. Because if there's any truth at all to anything that the government was saying, you and I wouldn't be talking right now. You know, I'd be, you know, they would have put me in prison, far enough away in prison so they'd have to feed me with a slingshot and pipe in the oxygen. The next event after that, because, we'd moved to Cuenca, they actually, you know, I figured living 10,000 feet in the Andes Mountains was, there becomes a point when you realize you have two choices. Either you're going to live either you can live in the Amazon jungle, which is very close to us, by the way, physically. Either you can live in the Amazon jungle, a hole somewhere, or you just have to live your life. You have to live your own truth and you have to live your own life. And we did. And what happened to that was that on December 2nd, 2009, Catherine and I were driving together to our home in the mountains, and they'd set up a special partida, which is this kind of place checkpoint. With cones and the checkpoint. It was a checkpoint, and it looked very innocent enough, like they were checking people's. And they do this frequently, where they check your matricula. They just check your registration, your car, and your insurance, and all that stuff. And when they got to me, and I gave them my papers, immediately guns drawn, get out of the car. And as soon as I heard the word Interpol, I knew that was it. And I have to honestly tell you, at that very moment, I honestly thought, I am never going to see my wife again. I am never. They're going to take me away. I'll be on a plane back to the United States, and they'll just throw me off the plane at 40,000 feet. I'm not joking. I mean, if they're crazy enough to put me in a paper with Osama bin Laden and have the audacity to put it in a paper that goes into every Sunday paper, in every major newspaper in the United States every Sunday, then what else are they capable of? The sky's the limit. So they had a series of hearings in Guayaquil, and it was apparent to me the first judge says, you gotta let this guy go. Stop this nonsense. He hasn't done anything. You know, what are you trying to pull? Literally, he gave an order saying, release this man from prison. The local police authorities say no, very much like earlier in this interview when we were talking about Jonathan Emord and the FDA. We're getting into a position now where if a judge in a given jurisdiction, in any country in this world, says, well, this isn't right, this is against the law, I'm the judge. I'm issuing an order to do blah, blah, blah. The police will go, no. No, you didn't read your script. Go back, judge. You didn't read the script the way you were supposed to. You didn't do what you were supposed to. So even though I had a judge's order to be released, they kept me anyways. They had a subsequent hearing. And it actually was two subsequent hearings. And at each hearing, there's a guy there with the United States State Department. And you know how when you go to a baseball game, you know how if you know anything at all about baseball, you've got the catcher making these signals to the pitcher, how he wants to pitch the ball, right?
Right, right.
And so the pitcher's looking at all these signals, you know, guy's, you know, pulling on his earlobe, scratching his nuts, whatever he's doing, he's communicating to the pitcher how he wants the ball thrown. At these hearings, you get this guy with the State Department signaling to the judge, you know, either his displeasure, you shouldn't have said that. You're supposed to, I mean, literally, it's as if the Ecuadorian judge is taking his marching orders from the United States State Department. And it was the most bizarre thing to watch. I mean, it was, you know, there's another thing where you realize, you know, going back to the Wizard of Oz, you know, you're looking behind the curtain and there's a guy pushing buttons and pulling on knobs and everything else. So I had a group of officers come to the prison on the morning of December 9th, 2011. And I said, well, where are we going? They said, the judge wants to talk to you. I said, well, my next
How long were you in prison in Ecuador?
7 days. Okay. From December 2nd to December 9th. So a week. I'm in prison for a week. But okay. I had a hearing scheduled for the following week. I had a hearing scheduled. And they said, we're going to go see the judge. He wants to talk to us. But my hearing's not for another few days. He says, well, it doesn't matter. The judge wants to talk to you. So we go, and I realized that they were lying when I could clearly see that they were driving to the airport. I thought, this is not good at all. This is not good. And they put me in a room, and you've got a lot of dissension among the officers because they know that what they're doing is dirty. They know it. So one of the police officers had mercy on me and said, here's a phone. You're going to need it. The police officer sneaks me a phone. I make a phone call to my associate who calls the judge. The Ecuadorian judge, who's to have my hearing on the foot, comes down to the airport. And by that time, they've got me on an American Airlines flight, because American Airlines works very busy with U.S. agencies to do extraordinary renditions. And is telling the pilot through the tower, you are to immediately release this individual. You don't. And the American Airlines pilot on Ecuadorian soil tells the Ecuadorian judge, I don't have to listen to anything. I'm in my plane. I'm on the tarmac. And guess what? I'm taking off. Okay. So that shows you where the real lines of power are. You know, don't listen to anything they tell you in the mainstream media. Don't listen to what the government, you know, understand that there are truths that exist behind the scenes.
So sovereign soil means nothing.
Nothing. Or any other. I mean, and I don't want to focus on Ecuador. This is true in any country. This is true in just about any country on earth, except for maybe, you know, BRIC nations like Russia, China, India, Brazil, and, you know, a few other nations that stand up for themselves. But in every nation on earth, they just do whatever they want to do. There is no respect whatsoever for international law. They do whatever they want. So here I am taken off to Miami. I'm in prison there for a month before they move me. They just basically told the judge, basically.
So the plane took off.
The plane takes off.
Well, what do you think? Is there anything more important than health? Do you think Sanitas will make a difference in our lives? I won't answer that question. I'll let time decide. I feel as if I'm a member of the audience, just privileged to be holding the microphone. I am as curious and excited to learn more about our health and longevity as probably you are. I don't know where this journey will take us, but I can tell you one thing. There's a big difference between being alive and truly living. Every week, I want to bring someone who can share something with us that can improve our lives, even if the progress is slow. Slow progress is better than no progress. Please join me in this new journey to expand our mind, body, and spirit. I hope this introduction and preview of upcoming shows has compelled you to subscribe for only $7.99 per month. Just go to sanitasradio.com and click on the subscribe button. You have absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain. As the great wise man Virgil said, the greatest wealth is health. That's it for now. Thank you for listening and spending some of your precious time with me. and Mel Fabregas. Until next week, be well, and remember that your health and longevity should not be classified information.